Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It is take two, April 12th. It is, I think, almost 80 degrees outside.
It's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
I've been waiting for this warm weather.
I don't know what's going on in downtown Salt Lake, but there was a lot of traffic in the afternoon getting downtown today. Mm. I was like, what is happening?
Or could it be that there are no streets that any of us can drive on?
That might be part of it. Yes, so it is.
Yeah.
So it's good, it's good to be back with the gang again. Greg Hughes, Mara Caraballo. It's been a couple weeks, but... And I feel like I'm still sort of out of the loop because I went on my vacation to the Netherlands with my family. Then I came home. Then I got a little sick. And now I'm back again. And when I was sick, I just chose not to watch the news. And when I was in Europe, again, I chose not to watch the news. So I've been trying to fire hose it and figure out what's happened in the last few weeks. So
was that therapeutic, staying out of it, given that it's your... what you do every day?
Yes,
news.
And the funny thing is my husband's lived with me long enough that he's addicted to news and he can't stop, so at least he's on like Twitter and checking everything out, and I just didn't want to know, so I didn't look.
That's healthy.
Yeah, I just had
You're
fun.
Refreshed and ready.
Yes.
Because we're into granular right now. The convention season is as granular as you can get, I feel.
Granular, and it matters.
Yep.
So...
yeah,
it does. And it's a higher information. You got a lot of debates going on, a lot of forums. You've got a lot of little details being discussed and that you won't really see discussed at the same extent in a primary or general
telephone
election.
It's a little high schooly. It's a little self-involved.
Well, I'm not a delegate, so I've missed the avalanche of texts and emails and direct mail that's coming into mailboxes. But I saw it today. Laid out. There's so much of it.
It's a lot to be a delegate. I've sometimes thought, maybe when I'm out of the news business, it would be a fun thing to do. But it takes a lot of time. And I don't know if people are first timers and then they get elected to be a delegate, know what they're getting in for. And if you're doing a good job at it, there's a lot of conversations and answering your phone and reading. So I want to talk about that because convention's coming up April 27th. So we're basically 2 weeks out from that at this point. Interesting to see. There's weird sniping between candidates going on online, Republicans going after Republicans in some of those races you're not paying attention to. I was waiting to see if there would be anyone who backs a candidate that was a big name in the Senate race. And John Curtis seems to be the first one to get an endorsement, that is. And that was from former Representative Chris Stewart this week. Did I miss any other big backings while I was gone?
That's the only one I'm aware of.
Because we talked about the Lee and... and
Lee didn't endorse anyone. He just went on a tour of forums with multiple candidates.
This was super clever, though. It takes, I think from a political play point of view, it was great. From a, helpful, maybe not.
So let me frame it for our listeners.
So he picked a few candidates that he sort of felt like they were on his playing field.
That's right.
Yeah. It was one day, and it really went from like 2 to 3, then 3:30 to 4:30, then, 5 to 6, whatever it is. Anyway,
four candidates,
and it was just a Gatling gun of boom, ba boom, ba boom. So four in a row, like go to this one, go to that one. And it was all in one day. And so you saw the candidates really pushing out that they were going to have this forum with Mike Lee, who's very popular with the state delegates. Mara and I had different takes. I found it to be a little bit, just pick a horse, get behind someone and help them win. You got a lot
Let's
of cachet.
Name the candidate. So he was with Carolyn Phippen, Trent Staggs.
Walton, and Brad Wilson.
And Brad Wilson,
Wilson, so those four. And I thought it was, trying to be everything for everyone and just going there with four candidates seemed a bit weak. But Mara has a different take, and I don't actually disagree that it was politically and tactically probably a smart move for Senator Lee to
now he doesn't have to lose at convention by picking the wrong horse,
also,
right?
Also, he's this, one, he gets to be the elder senator, and two, he gets to appear... It was brilliant to sort of tease out that my choice will matter, right? He drums up all this. He's put himself in such a good framing of he calls these town halls. All four of these candidates are now pushing out the Mike Lee. This came to my attention because I got a pushed out piece that Walton said, Mike Lee is hosting a town hall with me. I'm thinking, seriously? Like, he chose Walton to host?
Big news.
I realize he chose several, but I'm getting pushed this now from four, all sort of being fussy about the honor of Mike Lee. I mean, like, this is brilliant gameplay from Mike Lee, in which he's now become a part of the equation, and the equation that he's outlined for all of us is, who will he endorse? So suddenly we're now waiting. I mean, like,
we want to know now.
From gameplay, this is huge. And then he goes on to make these interesting strategic comments. He doesn't endorse anybody, but he essentially gives a great movie critique of all of their performances. So again, from a how do you become relevant when you're not in cycle and largely like who cares? But as Greg said, what Lee has going for him is an undue amount of support with the state delegate. Like the delegates really like him. He teases this out. So just from an inside baseball, what a way to become relevant in a cycle that it's not yours. Anyway, I thought it was good gameplay.
It is good, but everything you just described is about Mike Lee. I would love to see if one of the criticisms that Senator Lee gets is that the way he votes, he tends to be an outlier from the federal delegation of other senators or members of Congress. Why don't you go find a candidate that looks and sees things similarly to you and help that candidate win? And get some reinforcements in that delegation. I think he had to spend that capital to strengthen the Washington delegation in Utah, not spread it out amongst
And coming from every individual candidate's point of view, I think Greg's representing that point of view.
I am.
But it also brings up the double-edged sword that says, do endorsements matter? And every time we have this conversation, it's half a dozen and six. They matter and they don't.
In the general election it matters, but I think maybe when you're dealing with delegates and you have so many candidates to try to filter through, I think maybe it helps then because he's someone they know and can attach.
Particularly when the platforms are incredibly similar between these candidates.
They are. They all sound very similar.
You're not looking at a liberal Republican, so to speak. So you're looking at a clump of pretty true conservatives. And so if all their platforms are similar, how do I choose? Well, maybe I choose from their buddies, right?
Yeah.
Who drew their attention?
When I was looking, I guess this surprised me too, because you're looking at, he probably picked the ones that are most conservative and like him. John Curtis, I think, has been a little more of a centrist conservative. Did it surprise you that Chris Stewart backed him in the way that he voted and they interacted in Congress? Or is that something that you were like, fits?
I was disappointed to see it. Look, Chris, John Curtis, his funding for this race, why he came into this race late, is because Mitt Romney, I'm told, said we can raise the money for you. And this is how you can win. And they really brought that to him because he had said he wasn't going to run for the United States Senate. He changed his mind because I think he was recruited by Mitt Romney. John Curtis to this day will not say I fully support the Republican nominee for President Trump. He's very uncomfortable with that direct question. That's not someone like the other candidates that are running in the convention right now. So Stewart getting behind him, I think it surprised me, but I guess it doesn't because Chris Stewart has joined his brother Tim with this lobbying firm, or they're more in the lobbying world now, and I think there's a bit of a cottage industry in there, and so I think it helps on a bunch of levels to help those you've been working with, you may have a book of business with, or who you'd like to continue to have a book of business with. And so, you know, the Stewarts are not public servants, they're lobbyists in D.C. So,
well, I mean, I would just say there's lots of reasons to endorse candidates. I mean, you've got two former members, so there's a member-to-member angle there. Mm-hmm. And there's also then, as Greg is suggesting, a member-to-member, the whole ecosystem of politics in D.C., which includes lobbyists and special interest groups and former members together. Yeah. I guess I'm just reminded that there's lots of reasons to draw people's endorsements, lots of different alliances, and it's sometimes hard to suss out, is it an alliance? Is it a personal relationship, or is it an analysis that draws the endorsement?
I think the word you used, I think, is the best way, so it doesn't sound too
quite
strident.
As cynical.
Yeah, ecosystem. I think ecosystem
new, though,
is the word that
you.
I would say.
I didn't realize the Stewart family were lobbyists. So what did they lobby for? Everything? There's
so
all kinds of
his brother Tim co-founded the Bennett Group with Bob Bennett, and they've been highly involved in, you know, in lobbying.
He's been doing it for decades.
I didn't make that connection.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all right. The Stewarts are really connected family, much like the Coxes are. And the reason I'm bringing those up too is we can't indict some and not others. And the Stewarts are lobbyists, much like Greg Hughes is a lobbyist.
Mm. I'm on the state. That federal side is just a cesspool. I wouldn't.
I mean, I'll just point out. When I've worked with Ted, it's Tim. It's all been on state issues. I'm just saying, like, yeah. I'm a lobbyist. Greg's a lobbyist. So before Citizen Hughes waves too big of a flag there.
So yes, I'm not. I hate hypocrites, and I don't want to be one. But let me just say, I find there to be a bit of a cottage industry within the Beltway in D.C. that I don't subscribe to, and I think it's a different brand.
You don't think there's that here? That's cute.
Nope.
That's sweet.
I don't.
I know that's a few people sweet. That I didn't realize were lobbyists until recently, and I'm like, okay, this makes so much sense when I look at your lifestyle and all the things you have that I would like to have then I don't. So I think that lobbyists here in Utah are doing okay, too.
I think they are, yeah, too.
Probably depends on your industry.
They do, but
well,
I'm a little I'm atypical, though.
You're atypical?
At least in my own mind.
I love that you see yourself differently.
I do.
So
totally
cute.
Different.
I want to mention that without the conventions, there's actually quite a few candidates that a couple of years ago probably would have shunned the idea of getting signatures that have gotten them. And so far in the Senate race, you'll for sure see on the primary ballot Jason Walton, John Curtis, and Brad Wilson. I look forward to meeting Jason Walton. I haven't met him yet, but he quickly got those signatures. He's been fundraising well. I've decided at this point I'm not talking to Senate candidates until after convention. There was just too many to weed through because I was like,
move.
I don't really have time for a second full-time
job. Do you think,
job.
Brent, I've heard that Brent Orenhatch got his signatures, but I haven't seen anything reported.
So he submitted last week. He submitted Wednesday.
So they're still counting.
So they're counting. He had a degree of confidence that he got them. I mean, it seemed as though he was using a system that would support that confidence, but we have not had them issue an okay for him.
Yeah, so we're waiting for that. Blake Moore in House District 1 had them. I don't think there was anyone in the 2nd District. House 3, this one's a busy race too. John Dougal has them, Case Lawrence has them, and J.R. Byrd and Catherine Dahlin, I'm not sure how to say her name, they're getting close but aren't to the total. So I'm guessing they've turned them in and maybe you're still waiting on those numbers to
come
in.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I think a few years ago, it was a big conservative litmus test that you shun signatures. It still is for a branch of delegates, but it largely seems acceptable to be true to your party and give yourself some insurance at convention.
Mike Lee got signatures, and as we spoke about earlier, he's well received by the state delegates, and he in his race I think got signatures. So
I will note that a couple of Democrats who have had challengers need their signatures. They've already lost in convention. So the 27th is important because it's the state convention. But unless your district that you're running is in multiple counties, your decision will be made at this county convention. And for example, Salt Lake County's Republican convention is this Saturday. Mm. So that's all of, there's a Salt Lake County mayoral race that will be decided.
About that, yeah.
There's a lot. I think this Saturday has 3 conventions, right? Davis, Salt Lake, maybe Weber.
Yeah, it's Weber, Davis,
so some big
and
guys.
Salt Lake.
All
so
the little
three.
Guys have been ticking it off the list the last 2 or 3
and then
weeks.
Utah County, I think, is next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is all the last convention of the season is always this state, but lots of counties.
I will point out that there was a Democrat convention, and the
always
Democrat
is.
House member who is the incumbent, neither. He is the incumbent House member, or his opponent sought signatures. They need 1,000. They didn't go after him.
Yeah.
And he lost.
Yeah.
He got like 27%.
So
he's
going
eliminated.
To a primary.
No, they're not going to the primary.
Right.
He's
80%,
out.
That's right.
He's out. So, but I think it's funny because usually, not getting signatures is usually said, oh, that's the insular Republicans that don't want to have a primary and they're just too. But these two Democrat candidates didn't get signatures. They wanted to just duke it out in a convention, and no one had any problem with that.
That'll
seemed
be fun.
To be a normal
All
election
right, yeah.
cycle.
Well, I hope they make
about
it
the
quick.
Salt Lake County one because this state one doesn't happen.
Yeah,
that would be the Salt Lake County.
Well, they should make it quick because the weather's going to be gorgeous tomorrow and no one's going to want to be cooped up.
It's so true.
All right, well. Good luck to you if you're doing that. Two others I wanted to mention, too, just heading towards primary season for AG Derek Brown, and then Governor Cox got his signatures in, too. And if the Coxes are listening, like they do every week, I'm sure, shout out to Abby. Hopefully you're getting
recovery.
Some good rest, and everyone is serving you like a queen in bed right now. That's what I would want. Let's see what else we get to discuss. There's so much going on. My papers are sticking together. My brain can't think forward.
Former Salt Lake City Mayor Ted Wilson
died yesterday.
Yes, and it's been nice watching all the stories about him. I remember him by picture from when he was serving during the time that we were all doing the sandbagging for flooding in 83. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time since he's been mayor, but I think he was a force to be reckoned with. And I think someone that people genuinely liked and had great relationships moving forward. Did either of you work with him on issues after his time as mayor?
Yeah, I worked with him quite a bit. And what I love about Ted Wilson, and you see this on the tributes, is that he was the mayor. So a lot of people point to that. And he was a mayor for a long time. But then he was the director of the Hinckley Institute for 18 years. He helped establish and shape a lot of young political careers, both sides of the aisle. Then he was also, he had this epic, still talked about in social and on political science classes, an epic race for governor, which totally showed Ted Wilson's personality. Ted was leading by 30, and then he went on a rock climbing trip that gave Norm Bangeter some room. So, Ted was always Ted. And what I like to see about the tributes is the impact that he had for 30 years outside of public service, because it's a reminder of being an elected official is a great way to have an impact, but being a community engaged leader is also a tremendously good way to have an impact. And if you look at his tributes that are all well-deserved, a lot of people that are talking about the impact he made are talking about him when he wasn't an elected official. And then he jumped into some really controversial things. He is such an outdoor champion. He was also the champion of Ski Link, which was a highly controversial issue about the Cottonwood Canyons, one that his daughter is actually on the opposite side of where he would have been. But what is most telling is the decades of impact he had from a bunch of different chairs. And I like to see people who, he joined the professor world of teaching, and he was the main guy for a while as an elected official, and then he was an influencer, and then he was a community activist, and then he was a paid lobbyist, if you will, or a paid advocate. Mm-hmm. I love the different seats that he took.
Yeah, I got to work with him on an issue that usually you see a lot of contention. It was he worked with, I think, the Rivers Council, and I was a lawmaker, and I was serving on UTA's board at the time. And there was some issue with a train station that was coming up, and the traditional battle lines when I served in the legislature, where you had these sides that were really using the media to criticize each other, and it was really contentious, and you didn't see a lot of common ground. Ted Wilson came in and immediately, with his institutional knowledge and his explanation of issues he had dealt with in the past and how he was looking at issues right now, I found myself trusting him in a way that you should be able to trust each other when you're trying to work on public policy. And he didn't get into the games of lobbing bombs or trying to win an outside baseball perception game. He was really committed to the work. And I found that my time working with Ted Stewart to be substantive. We obviously didn't agree on every issue, but I really did trust his take. And I learned a lot from him when he served in that role. And I thought we got some good things accomplished. So that's the Ted Wilson that I worked with and that I highly, highly respected. And you could see all the things, all the different hats he wore in life kind of culminating in what he was applying at the time we were working on policy together.
I buried Exoro's headline. Ted Wilson and Norm Bangeter were essential 23 years ago when we started propping up the Exoro Group, which was a bipartisan firm, which people didn't understand at the time.
I still don't understand. I don't think it is.
I know. I'll keep explaining. But Ted and Norm, who had been fierce competitors, were a part of the Exoro startup, which is cool.
That is
anyway, he
cool.
was old school gentleman, mm-hmm. policy, get stuff done, and yet he maintained his true heart of being coming from the Democratic side, and he was so effective.
I miss that old school because I never had the chance to work with him how you did, but it seems like the same kind of stories that you would get out of the Senate from Senator Orrin Hatch, who he ran mm-hmm. against, and Ted Kennedy, when they both had their staunch beliefs, but they could sit down in the same room and they could talk with their wisdom and their friendship and try to work out the issues. And I feel like a lot of what people are talking about from Ted Wilson is a lost art in politics these
service
days.
First and not self first.
And there's great stories like that with Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, where they worked on whether it was the tax reform issues or other issues, they had those moments that you read about. And I think that finding trust with those that you serve or you work with is so hard to gain sometimes in politics and policy. And Ted Wilson came with an ample dose of trustworthiness.
Well, let that be his legacy, Utahns. Let's try to be more like that as we continue trying to figure out the hard issues of the day. I want to look a little bit towards the presidential election. We're finally in the season where things are heating up and people are going to start thinking about it. RFK Jr., you said that you two have been chatting amongst yourselves in your own private time when you hang out. And are you guys agreeing on the issue of RFK, or are you fighting about it? I did notice that he picked a VP candidate while I was out of town. I don't know a lot about her, but are we feeling like he is going to be a force to be reckoned with, a wrecking ball, or a...
So I think nationally, I think it hurts Biden that you have a Kennedy that I think young people are listening. He's done a lot. He's done a very effective job of communicating his message digitally and online, and I think that's where young people get more news than not. Kennedy, who's appealing to the younger generation instead of the older generation or old school generation, is new. His running mate's a little more left than I think Republicans who'd want to vote for RFK. Republicans
to be the consensus I see online.
So the Republicans I know, and even in my own household, that really resonates about RFK Jr. is his inherent suspicion or worry of a government that's too heavy-handed or powerful, or even corporations who feels like to some degree big government and big business merged at the expense of the working class and the everyday people. RFK Jr. really is a voice for people that feel that way. And I think there are a lot of Republicans that feel that way, but...
So before we move to Utah.
Okay.
This is where our conversation started, because I slightly disagreed with Greg on the data we're seeing about who he pulls from. He's an interesting thing because first blush, he's going to pull from the left, right? He's going to pull from the Biden vote. But the research I'm seeing is that he has this interesting Venn diagram with Trump in that he does a very good job being plain spoken and flipping off the system, flipping off the man. And that is a Trump voter who's appealing
to that. Yeah, the CDC, the FDA, the CIA, and
plain
FBI.
Spoken. Like, yeah. And the same sort of plugged in rich dude saying, screw the system, clean it out. And the same sort of belief that because these are insiders, they must know how to clean it out. And that's a very Trump brand. He is the closest I have seen with his anti-vax stuff to emulating the same quality and frankly dissonance that Trump has in saying what he says, but people find it so believable. This same unusual messenger who's delivering this unusual message. Yeah. And I think that is where he might draw from Trump. Now, that's inconclusive, but it does appear that he might be drawing a Trump vote, not a Republican vote. I want to differentiate that.
No, you're right. There is a difference.
And then that led us to talking about Utah.
Yeah, so the only difference that Mara and I have on the broader national is that when he picked that running mate that's firmly on the left of...
firmly, that has a lot
that
of
is,
money.
That, to me... If you,
money makes
you
the
3
world go
to
round.
5 to 6%, that I think those percentages come more from people that would have otherwise voted for Biden. That's what I think. But Utah,
she wasn't picked for any political reason. She has no, I mean, usually the politic around the vice president is a key swing state.
Yeah.
Hers was the politic around who she can pry money from. That woman has availability to cash, and when you're a third party challenger, that could be hugely appealing.
Yeah. Yep. And interestingly enough too, while we're talking about third party candidates, I think the last time we met we were still waiting to see if No Labels were going to offer someone up, but I think they realized that there was already a third party candidate in RFK Jr., so there was really no oxygen left in the room for it.
But Kennedy becomes really interesting in Utah, from my opinion.
this theory here, uniquely Utah, I think it breaks the national mold of where the votes come from. Utah, Mara has convinced me that there is an angle. If you didn't want to see Trump do famously well in Utah, you would want Biden's not winning this state. There's no version of it that's ever going to happen. I think there is an argument that RFK Jr. is maybe the Ross Perot of 92.
Or the Evan McMullen everybody thought the first time
like
around
it's
with
not
Trump.
Even that. Democratic friends that are listening, unite. So here's the thing.
Here we go.
there. So Trump is taking right now with, I will put all my Vegas money down. Trump is taking all of our Electoral College votes. So
in Utah,
Yes. So there is no downside to voting for Kennedy, because Biden doesn't have those votes. He's not going to have those votes, folks. We all know this will never be a Biden state. Biden's going to come in here fourth and fifth if we can figure out who the Green Party and Abe Lincoln is. Like, he's not ever winning it. So that doesn't matter. That's not in play. Kennedy, though, we don't love Trump as much as other Trump states do. We're a weird red state, right? Yeah. We're undeniably red. But to the Evan McMullen, we're undeniably conservative. So I say vote Kennedy. I might go full time. I'm getting the shirt. I'm waving the flag, because every Kennedy vote never takes away from Biden. It only takes away from Trump.
I'm interested to see, though, because I think if there were any state where he had a chance of getting our six.
Go Utah.
I think it could be Utah. But then again, I think a lot of people thought that Evan McMullen might be able to pull out a win here in Utah. And obviously it didn't happen
this
in the end.
Robert
people voted
Kennedy.
Republican.
This is Robert Kennedy, Heidi.
We are this hybrid. Again. Utah's this hybrid of a patriarchal, sustain their leader state, like almost like a New England establishment with a Western independence. And so you merge the two because of the culture and the Western frontier, and you get something that's a Kennedy.
Yeah. And I think I'm leaning that. Like last week when we
but
were
talking.
But
you don't even like, you just want to hurt. All you want to do is take stabs at Trump. You don't
well,
even
this
like
is, this is
RFK
correct.
Jr.
Do you think I'm going to deny this? Like, I mean, I think he's fine, whatever. I think he's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but
I don't.
Like, whatever. I am not going, that statement does not shame me. It emboldens me. And so like where last week I was just noodling on this,
you're thinking
now
about it,
I think I might go
it?
All in. I might start printing my
and
own
you,
t-shirts.
And you say
in
he's not
going
to lose any Biden votes. You're trying to get Biden votes to go his way. You are.
Zilch Biden votes will be left. If you're listening and you think Trump is so nuts, I say vote Kennedy.
it's all strategy. There's nothing that you like about it. You just want to.
Oh,
it's just me. I actually, there are things about Kennedy
Citizen
I actually really
Hughes.
Like. I do.
I know. That's the thing is, I think I could persuade. Greg is on the fence.
So when Greg, I'm not on the fence. I'm saying that I have large.
Let me be more specific.
Sympathies
I'll
for
bet
that
I can
candidacy
peel
or
off
message.
At least one of your children.
Don't you get near my kids. I'm telling you right now, because that might be true. So
the
you stay
thing
away.
Is, I think there's a lot of voters here. They vote sometimes on one issue and they have their one issue. Yeah. And if your one issue is the pandemic, I think there are a lot of people, the further we get from the pandemic, the less I think they care and are riled up about it.
That's
but I
right.
think there are some that were like, okay, I'm voting for him because he's going to fix, you know, whatever they believe is wrong with the CDC and the FDA. I've heard other people who have one issue they believe he's right on whether the left or the right. It'll be interesting. I think he is a tried and true Democrat. But I think he's an old school Democrat when I look at him. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I'm not
going to
point out how liberal he is, because Heidi, you're right. I'm starting with the anti-vaxxers.
You're starting with the anti-vaxxers. here's something I want to talk about, which is interesting, because we're talking about how he's uniquely Utah. But there was something online I saw on The Economist where you could go in and say, what makes you the most likely Trump or Biden voter? And they had where you could stick in age, or if you were suburban or urban, and who was the most likely. And they had a list of things that would make you the most likely Biden voter and the most likely Trump voter. Let me read you the list that makes you just top of the line Biden voter: atheist, black, gay or lesbian, agnostic, bisexual, or other. Trump's most likely sections that will vote for him: evangelical, number one, Mormon, number two, white, non-Latino, lives in a rural area, high school only. So the interesting thing is that some of the most likely voters, when you look across the country, they say are Mormons. But at the same time, you look at Utah, and I think that when you look at our demographics and members of the LDS Church here, I don't know that all of them are that far Trump, because I think there's a lot of people who are thinking, is there another option? Is The Economist right? How did they do their work? What do you think?
So this reflects something I read in the New York Times about. So in 2020, there was just more likely voters who were registered Democrat than there were likely voters that were registered Republican. There was a percentage yeah. lead. I don't remember how much it was, 5-6%. That is, going into the 2024 election, the New York Times is reporting that it is absolutely even. Like, that advantage is gone. The part that I thought was funny, and they're trying to break down, Heidi, these demographics of how that became the case. And they're saying that it's the white working class that has left the Biden vote, or the Democrats, and is now migrating over to the Republican vote. And they note, the New York Times notes that that's a dying demographic. that's a demographic that's not that might be good Biden for Republicans
voters
now.
Who specifically
that the white working class okay. vote is an aging out demographic of voters, and so that might be a short lived advantage for the Republicans. What I found comical about that is that they really did emphasize this 4-year college degree voter supporting Democrats at such a high rate. And the unspoken message here is, if you're smart and not ignorant, then you're a Democrat. You're a Democrat. You're not a Republican.
We talk about that a lot in private. 37%
of Americans that are between the ages of 24 and 64, and you can vote when you're starting 18, only 37% have a college degree. I don't think with the cost of higher ed that number is going to grow. I don't think this college-educated demographic that nobody wants to say is a shrinking demographic, I don't think that's going to stay in the Democrats' favor, because I don't think going to college is going to mean what it means now or what it's meant in the past. That is a shrinking demographic. And what they ignore is, you look at even these numbers right here, when you're looking at numbers of minority voters, these were in the north of 90% when Romney ran for president. In 2020, Trump received the most minority vote for a Republican candidate for president since Eisenhower. And those numbers have grown since 2020. So those are going to take a few percentages in this election that everyone imagines is going to be close. I don't see the attention paid to those kind of variables. I see things like, if you're ignorant and white, you vote for Trump. If you're really smart and you're, I don't know, you're atheist or heathen, I don't know what, you vote for Biden. But it's just, I don't know. I don't take these voting blocks the way they're being shared in the Times or in the Economist.
So Greg and I are having two different conversations. I just want to note that before, because it's not a direct comparison.
All right, so we're having different classes here.
Greg is talking about polling. I want to talk about what the Economist did, because I thought it was really more interesting than the polling I've seen.
You can play around with it for a while.
Yes, exactly. So to go to this, one of the things I loved about what this Economist article did is it, I think, better simulates how voters are approaching this election. Like, there's a tweak and a tweak and a tweak and a tweak. And how evangelicals and Mormons got in my mind is, this isn't polling that they're doing. This is variable testing, right? Yeah. And so what they did, I think the reason Mormons on there is, when you look at, this is driven by polls, but they allow you to sort of start typing in different variables. And what we do know is evangelicals and Mormons are more consistent on the issue of Trump. Like, it's not a like him, don't
but
like
these,
him.
So these aren't cross tabs?
No, you could change it to being like a Mormon
the variables.
Who's
it's super
Latino
cool, actually.
And gay,
exactly.
And lives in the city, and then all of a sudden your vote changes.
So these are weighted variables that are compounded of multiple polling. So I love what they did, because it's how we're all doing it. You're sort of like, well, if I think about this or this, and then I weigh this. And so, again, Mormons, it wasn't that they were consistent in voting for Republicans. Now then, when you factored in maybe where they lived or their age or their ethnicity, then it started to shift it. Mm-hmm. And I just loved how they did it. I mean, it's worth going to economist.com.
I'll link it in the podcast.
Yeah, it's from April 12th. And I like it because I think what we know over and over is, none of us are like, I love Biden or I love Trump. So it allows us to start tweaking. It's almost the conversation we just had about delegates who are choosing between similar people. Yeah. In this case, we're choosing between people maybe we're not enthusiastic about. So what's the tipping point? Is it age? Is it education? Is it your ethnicity? Anyway, it's a very interesting.
So I just,
I wasted a lot of time clicking
question.
Around on it. It's
I have a question.
Yeah.
I just Googled how many Jews, people that are Jewish in America. It was 7 million. How many people are Mormons in America? The Google said that it was 7 million people, Americans, who are Jewish in faith or identify as Jewish. And then of those that would say they're Mormons, it's 6.5 million. So why? Where's? Because I know
it's a very small percentage.
I've seen stats that say that people that are Jewish, 70% and plus are Democrats. So why isn't that in that line there?
So you're talking about two things. Do I self-identify and how I vote? And so,
but if Jewish people are predominantly Democrat, why aren't they one of those arrows or one of those big voting blocks?
So my guess is Pew put out a study that correlates with what The Economist is doing. And the Pew study really does. So the methodology here is looking at YouGov, and it's 1,500 Americans each week. It's a rolling data set. Okay. And what then they're looking for is consistency. So I would suggest, I don't know this, but if you take a population, so this is illustrative, not knowledge. If you take a Jewish population, it probably starts to vary, not based on religion, but other indicators. Where Mormons tend to be consistent regardless of the state they're in, at least that's what the Pew studies show. And this is a rolling, they've gathered results since 2023. They have 100,000 individual responses of people who plan to vote. And then they're using regression modeling, which we have talked about. So remember, these are models. So they get weighted and rolled in, which is not the methodology that polling uses. So I love modeling because it's cumulative.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a weighted factor, and what you're seeing is a variable that hasn't been consistent. So it starts to not be as weighted.
And there's nothing good or bad about it either. I thought it just felt a bit of cherry picking to see Mormons here, but knowing that there's people of other faith that have some predictable.
So remember, it's a regressive modeling system. It's a model, not a poll. Right. And then that makes it easy. It's totally worth a geek's time to go start looking at modeling versus polling, because they're cool data sets. They often rely on different things, but they compound to a very different result. And I think this year, modeling will be more indicative, right?
Yeah.
It's part of 2026's big change on moment in time, or sort of a cumulative polling versus modeling, which does have some, it has some intelligence knocked into it. Now, if you're wrong, if your models are wrong, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But this Economist article, I'm glad I hadn't seen it until
I didn't completely understand it. And I saw some people tweeting about it. The thing that caught my attention is they were talking about the modeling and how it could play in, a couple people with some tweet threads talking about how this could play into some of the states that are around us here in the West that are going to be possibly up for grabs in the election, whether it's Nevada or Arizona, where we know that there's probably higher Mormon populations or whatnot. So people were looking at the modeling and saying, hey, is this something that's, you know, going to make the vote go one way or another? And it was a lot of stuff that I didn't completely understand, you know, which way those numbers were going. But it was interesting because I think that people are looking at that modeling and looking at some of those states that are going to be contentious in the next few months. So super interesting. If you have some time to waste, you can go on there and you can kind of change around who you want to look at, their age, all kinds of things, where they live, and figure out where they might vote. Go plug yourself in, Greg, with all your different things.
Okay.
And see who you end up voting for, who they think.
I just plugged myself in largely. Mm. And I am...
Are you an RFK voter or no?
They don't give me an RFK.
That's rude.
But look at... Oh, wow. So this says... I put in white Latino. Sorry. Sorry for those who are. Why can't I be? I can't.
Is Italian Latino?
Well, it is now.
Okay.
If I am, in fact, a white Latino, and I'm a female, and I'm going to have to bump my age up. That's too bad. I'm voting for Biden. I'm voting for Biden.
Mm. Oh, shocking. Well, at least we know the modeling works, right?
Phew. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I came out clean there.
All right. So I don't know. We'll put the link in there if you want to check it out. And one last thing before we go, I wanted to mention, in the last legislative session, we mentioned that the one thing they really barreled through was making sure there was funding so possibly we could get an MLB and an NHL team. And it seems like the NHL team... Maybe happening. Yes.
Yeah.
An announcement coming in the next week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be the Coyotes if they come here. So
I want to call them the Utah Taxpayers with Z's at the end.
Yeah, I think you should say that for MLB. You and I both agree. The NHL model.
I do.
NHL hype, I'm going to tell you, has a little more clout to it. Like it's not, the Jazz owner has been doing a good job, I think, on understanding each professional team has entirely different professional revenue models. And NHL's revenue model fits Utah.
Salary cap, it's a team that's in trouble in
we
Phoenix
do well
right
with
now.
Off sports, with second
it's
tier
an Olympic
sports.
Sport. Yes. It's how it's raising its money for the taxes is a more responsible way than the baseball bill was. So there's a lot.
Can we change Coyotes to like end with a T-E-E-Z, like Coyotes?
We probably will.
There's probably going to be some Z's in that.
That probably will.
Mascot
that sounds
name,
like
sure.
a Utah name.
Yeah.
I'm sort of disdainful. I will say a quick headline when you pushed it out. I was just glancing really quick on my phone, and I thought you were actually talking about coyotes, kind of like a wolf thing. And I'm like, oh, were we talking about a lands issue? Then I realized it was
You know, the lands issues shouldn't bring such a grimace to your face like that. That's a good issue.
They do.
Although depending on where you live, some people call them coyotes.
Well, that was the thing. It was it a coyote or a coyote?
Which way do you go at your house?
I think I say coyote.
I'm a coyote for sure.
Coyote.
And now that it has Z's on it, for sure.
For sure, you've got to eat.
But look, Coyote. When the New Orleans Jazz came to Utah, they kept the Jazz. Just keep the name. Just keep it.
Yeah, you can't change it, right?
I think we can. I mean, look at our Jazz uniforms. We just changed those. We can change anything.
We can do whatever we want.
Do whatever we want. Yeah.
New names. I think all the new names everyone picks are like Golden Knights for Las Vegas, Kraken in Seattle. Those names are going to age out. They're not going to be names we're going to like.
Isn't Kraken that like... Monster under the sea.
Yeah, it's like an octopus monster or something. But
it's I think those are all dumb names. After that.
Just leave it coyotes. I think it's good.
All right.
I think it'll stand the test of time.
We'll see how it plays out. It's been fun hanging out again. I missed you guys.
I know. We missed you. It was good. It's good. It's good to get this off my chest. I got a lot going on, you know. Got to be able to share this.
It's like just kind of therapy to come here and vent and just share your feelings. So thanks for sharing our feelings with us and hanging out.
Happy Friday.
We'll talk again soon. Happy Friday.